part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time.
How have you been, sir?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are we the only two people that did not go to San Diego Comic-Con and have the greatest time ever that you ever had in your whole life? Yeah, it seems like it. Definitely. Yeah. It seems like it was like the greatest Comic-Con ever that anyone ever had and the best. And I'm just like,
I know I've been avoiding hearing about it because it looks so great. I mean, like the things that I was kind of keyed into on social media was the Futurama activation.
Which I was very jealous.
Yeah.
I mean, the episodes are up. I saw the other day, right? Is it just one episode?
They come out Sundays. It's been 2 weeks. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So did you start your podcast yet? Did you restart it?
No, we're probably holding off until we have time to do like proper analysis of them all.
So we
initially were thinking like we were going to do quick reaction podcast, but that wasn't really the strength of what we were doing before. Uh-huh. Like it was very, like we took a lot of time to prepare and, so yeah, we're going to probably lean into doing that. And so it probably won't be until the season is done that we'll start up on some thoughtful analysis.
Unlike this podcast where we just like jump in and blab about movies or whatever, whenever we talk about stuff. There's no thoughtful analysis here on Part-Time Fanboy. Go ahead.
It's barely thoughtful on ALM. We try.
No. I'm sure it's, yeah. I never got sucked into the Futurama thing. I've seen a couple episodes here and there and thought they were very clever, but didn't become obsessed with it. So, maybe I should just dive in, at some point soon, but let's just say that you're Gabe Chang, you know, and this is like your sixth time back on the podcast, Gabe.
I believe so. At least four.
I checked this morning.
I feel like
you've
four
been
or
on five. So six.
Oh,
so you're
nice.
Like an old timer here. Welcome back.
Glad to be one. Thank you.
Are you addicted to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, Gabe? No, I appreciate
you
always.
I have to admit that I have a problem.
No, I appreciate you coming back on as always. I always appreciate you reaching out to me. I've always really loved your projects and stuff. So, I love to help in whatever way I can, and having you on, it's the barest minimum, but I really love your projects and, I enjoy chatting with you. We should hang out more in person if we ever get the chance, but Gabe, you have another Kickstarter coming this week, right? It is August 6th and it launches, is it August 9th, right?
Correct. Yes.
So by the time this podcast goes up, it will be on Kickstarter, which is probably Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah. Nice.
Great.
What is the name of the project? So you're going to help me pronounce. This one's a little bit different than the things that you've done in the past.
Yes, it's got a bunch of made-up words.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's different.
Exactly.
It is called Requiem in Relke.
It is a
one-shot science fiction western, and it's about a half-alien, half-human assassin named Aurora who returns to her rural hometown to hunt down the people responsible for murdering her grandmother.
Nice.
And the art is by Colleen Palmer, and it is my, I think somewhere in the page, which I might need to change it, I say it's my first collaboration with Warden Comics, the publisher, but it's actually my second. I was involved in their anthology last year.
Oh, so this is actually through a publisher? Like, this is different. This is not like your, you know, in the past, it's just been you, and I specifically remember, like, on the last chat that we had, where I was basically saying like, Gabe, are you going to like set up your own shingle and like do your own stuff? And like, but now it seems like you're working with a publisher. This is brand new. What is going on? What is happening here?
Yeah, I am working with a publisher. Again, it's called Warden Comics. The main guy behind it, his name is Ludi Sexton. And he has produced some of the other comics that he has produced are, they're called Nod. Another one is called, Double Cross. I'm forgetting the name of the other ones, but then Colleen Palmer, the artist, has done two books with him, Crow and the Eternal Night, and then Crow and the Vengeful Light. And then they together have produced, the Monstrosities anthology. The first one was last year that I was a part of with Elisa Menegel. And this one, I believe it's called O. It's all like tentacle horror based or something. Yeah. Or I didn't see the submission because I was busy working on Requiem. But yeah, there he's, you know, a small press publisher based in Texas, I believe. And he has put together some really cool stuff and was really great to work with on Monstrosities last year. So I reached out to first Colleen, because she has experience with him. And I said, you know, what is that experience like? And how is it working on a Kickstarter with Ludi? And, you know, she said that she's had great experiences with him and she's, you know, very, very good at Kickstarter as well. And so I reached out to him, shared him the pitch, shared within the script. And he said, yeah, let's go for it. He had some things that he wanted to do. He didn't really have any notes on the script. But he had some things that he asked me to kind of make a part of the campaign, which I was happy to oblige and was already kind of part of the plan, which was great. So it fit in really well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and we're off to the races. It's my first time working with somebody else on a Kickstarter, which is just invigorating because it doesn't feel like it's entirely on my shoulders.
Wow, this is a big deal. I feel,
yeah,
like,
for big
you,
step.
Nice, nice, nice. You have to kind of trust in somebody else to like help you get the thing going.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. Well, before we dive into the publishing thing, let's talk about the actual project, because one of the things, the criticisms I've had of myself lately is I start chatting to people about like how they put the books together and how they, you know, how they got their ideas and all this stuff. But we don't talk about like what the book is about until later on in the podcast, which, you know, whatever, it's my podcast, but I want people to go to Kickstarter and support your project. So what is, you mentioned a little bit like in sort of like a little elevator pitch earlier, but like, what is it about? And it also, like, from what I've seen of the project, looks very different than what I've seen you do, at least in the recent past, you know, not necessarily, yeah, for Molly and stuff like that. But it definitely doesn't seem like the sort of like sci-fi kind of comedy romps that you've been engaging in for your past, like maybe two or three Kickstarters. So how is this one, yeah, different?
This is my first comic with Colleen Palmer. She previously did the variant cover for Into the Wilderness, one of my other short stories.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how I connected with her. And I was writing this short story, I think in 2020. So I've been sitting on it for a while. And I had an image in my head for how it wanted to look.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say I wrote it for Colleen, but I was like, this, the whole time I was writing, I was like, Colleen would be really good at this. Like, this is like, this I feel like is in her wheelhouse based on the books that I've read that she's done and just the process of working with her on the Into the Wilderness variant cover. So that's, you know, that's one of the reasons for the art change, the way that I kind of wrote it with her kind of in mind. And it is different. It is science fiction. It is, the kind of science fiction where, similar to For Molly, where one thing is changed or one major thing is changed and we see the effects of that thing in a world that is very similar to our own, which is that a couple of generations ago, there was, first contact with aliens, a race, called, the Skilk, who are kind of reptilian humanoid aliens, came to Earth as refugees. And they've been living among humans for a couple generations now. You know, I mentioned that this main character, who is half alien and half human, has has a grandmother on Earth who was well, I didn't mention this, but she was a Skilk. And we see the repercussions of that in modern society. And it is really about the tension between those two things, like the assumption being that humans and aliens would not get along. It's a similar premise to District 9, I would say, where humans and aliens would not get along. These aliens are much more humanoid and have the ability to speak English and kind of can assimilate in a way, but are also they're easily identifiable because they have green skin and they have yellow eyes and diamond pupils. So it is about it is about that. It is about in a much larger sense, and this is also to do with the conversations that you and I have had on previous times that I've been on the podcast. It is about race, and it is about feeling a part of a community, and the tension that comes from knowing that you are a part of a community but not feeling like you are part of a community, because the main character, as I said, is half Skilk and half human. So she feels like she is a part of each community but is not accepted fully by either one, nor does she feel totally like she has both feet in either one, because she can't, because of the way she looks. She looks like a human, but she has Skilk eyes. So she has yellow eyes with diamond pupils, which she covers with red sunglasses. So it is about, I walk among you, but I'm not one of you. It is about the feeling of fitting in, but not fitting in. And it is about the tension that comes from that and the violence that comes from that. Nothing that I personally experienced, but it's a Western, essentially. It is a lawless world where this character, the main character, feels that the only justice that she's going to get is the kind of justice that she's able to mete out on her own.
No, I mean, there's a lot in there when I, and you were only able to provide me with a couple of pages, but what I read was like, oh, I was like, this is different. Like, this is a bit more like Gabe addressing things directly, kind of subversively as well within the story. I mean, it's not overtly addressing a lot of like what we're going through today, but it's there. And I was like, wow, is Gabe getting a little political on me? Like, I was like, this is cool. No, because I liked it. I mean, I love stuff like that. I mean, obviously, I love the stuff that you've done in the past. But we've had several conversations. Again, this is your sixth time on the podcast between one another, where, you are mixed heritage Asian and I am mixed heritage Latinx. And kind of we've talked a bit about how we both have gone through our lives and felt like we never really fit into either culture perfectly, right? And it seems like you're leaning on that for this book and also addressing certain issues, obviously, that you and I cannot avoid in the current political climate that we are living in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was interesting because there was a lot of like, and I'm trying to look it up now and I don't know why I can't remember the name, but specifically towards Asian communities, the legislation that was passed like in the late 1800s or early 1900s in the US, where it was
the Chinese Immigration Act.
Yeah, there you go. And where you could not, they could, male members of that race or community could not bring their wives over, like just the ridiculous restrictions that were placed on them. And in this, it's like they can't hold patents, right? Like they can only work certain jobs, even though the technology that they brought, I mean, it's a little bit of alienation too, right? But less accepted in society. It was like, it's so funny because just the couple of pages I read, like really touched me and affected me and were like, go Gabe. I was like, you are like addressing it, right on. And that's the sort of thing that I appreciate. So like, good on you, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it what you're referring to, so we can explain for the listeners, is I had this vision of the first couple of pages where when I was writing it, I should say, that the main character is returning home to her rural hometown, and in the fields around her, she sees these giant mech harvesters, like the size of buildings, that are futuristic technology that are doing the harvesting in these fields. And then it's revealed a couple of pages in, at about the midpoint of the story, that these mech harvesters were brought across the galaxy by the Skilk as part of the diaspora, as part of their refugee experience, that they brought those to Earth. But when they brought them, they weren't allowed to, because and I say it in here, I can bring up the pages if I can click fast enough on my computer. Dead air.
No, so I mean, basically, what it is like an alien race came and brought this technology with them that they probably know more about than the humans, and they are not allowed to work with it. They have been placed in, you know, manual sort of labor or other kind of jobs, again, that humans don't want to do, which is, I don't know if it's irony, but it's like the thing of like, hey, we know all about this. We brought it, and now you're using it, and you're using us to do the stuff that you don't want to do, right? Like, that's kind of like,
it's exploitation at its most blatant.
Yeah.
You know, what I say in the book is Skilk were denied rights of citizenship and couldn't file patents, own property, or start businesses, with few other options. Most refugees took unskilled labor jobs working on the machines they themselves had brought across the galaxy.
Yeah.
Because humans, human governments were, not surprisingly, xenophobic, which is, literally means fear of aliens. And so these human businesses and these human business people were able to start businesses, just said the word business three times in a row.
That's fine.
That use this technology, and they were able to profit from it, but not the immigrants, not the alien immigrants. Yeah. So that is an important part of the landscape that I am creating, the world that I am creating, and the reality that the main character is Aurora, who is the half human, half alien assassin, and her counterpart, the person that she meets in her hometown, whose name is Zephyr. That's the reality of the world that they live in, where aliens are, the Skilk are second class citizens. They are exploited. They are not treated well. And they are marginalized.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one, I was reading those pages that you gave me. I was very much just knowing your background and obviously knowing a bit about history in general, and, you know, in particularly how the Chinese and Asians have been treated in this country, which, if any of you do any research out there who are listening, and you don't know about it, you will be shocked like when you find out. Like, and so when I was reading it and knowing your background, I was like, oh, wow. Like, you know, because, I mean, this is exactly what happened to Chinese Asian workers when they first came over to this country, or, you know, quote unquote, allowed in to, you know, work on the railroads and whatever, and the mines and stuff like that. And so I was just like, oh, cool. And it also, again, I was like, oh, this is different, like, than what he's done before. Because, you know, For Molly was a little bit gritty and had, like, you know, kind of like a realistic sort of like, you know, Mad Max sort of like world, whatever, wilderness world in it. But I don't know that you hit stuff on the head that is so personally related to your own situation and background as you're doing with this. Have you in your past work, right?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, the spoiler alert for For Molly, that the main bad guy ends up being a Catholic priest, and that was after I had worked at a Catholic high school and had a bad experience
with
a hostile work environment. So I was, that was me kind of taking a shot. But no, that, nice. that was a little bit more indirect.
The Catholic Church can take it. Apparently they've been taking it again and again, as they should.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is definitely more direct. This is, me trying to figure out a way as I'm writing it to really address how I'm feeling, not so much how I'm feeling as what does it feel like for me?
Yeah.
And what is my experience? And you know, interacting with people that are, well, let me put it in terms of the book. There's a scene where Aurora is interacting with Zephyr, and her sunglasses are off. And this was one of the pages that I sent you. And the four pages that I sent you will be the ones on the Kickstarter page. So for all of your listeners, you can see all these pages. So in the pages where Aurora is interacting with Zephyr, she has her sunglasses off so that she can show off that her eyes are similar to hers.
Yeah.
They're also Skilk eyes. And then in scenes where she's interacting with humans, in the first couple of pages here, until the end of page one, where it's revealed that she is a half alien, half Skilk, which is the word I made up for it, is the Medjus. You're one of the Medjus
like a half breed or something.
Zephyr. What Zephyr asks her.
Yeah.
So whenever she's interacting with humans, she has her glasses on.
Yeah.
So that that feature, which is really her only defining feature of being a Skilk, is kind of obscured. That is very much part of my, I wouldn't say day-to-day life, but it's definitely part of my existence, where it's like, I don't look Chinese. I don't know. My experience has always been like, I don't think I look Chinese. And then people realize that I am, or they learn my last name, or I tell them that I'm half Chinese, and they're like, oh yeah, now I see it.
Oh, wow. That's wild. That's wild.
And honestly, like, this is a bit of a tangent, but I can also I feel like, I don't know, I've never like tested this like empirically, but I feel like I can easily identify other half Asian people.
Oh really?
Like on TV, like I'll be like, oh, they're half Asian.
Yeah.
My fiance is always like, how can you tell? Like, how do you know? And I'm like, I can tell. Like, it's weird.
That's interesting.
But I'm not always right. I'm sometimes wrong. But
sure.
But getting back to the comic, that is my experience of like, especially when I was younger, I was like, I wanted to feel like, okay, if I'm around my Chinese family, what can I do to make myself look or act more Chinese? Or if I'm around my Italian family, what do I do to make myself look or act more Italian? Because no matter what, I don't feel like I 100% fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Like, and then the thing that I'm thinking of too is, you know, when I was trying to look up the name for the Chinese, whatever, the horrible act, you know, the thing that popped up, you wrote this around 2020, which I'm assuming this is part of like what we've chatted before about like your pandemic stories, right? Like you had a bunch of things that you wrote down, and there was a bunch of like, I mean, awful anti-Asian sentiment that like propped up during that time. So this must have been in reaction to that as well, correct?
Like, yeah, definitely. This is very much a stop Asian hate story. You know, it's coming out a little bit later than probably the fever pitch of that
sure,
movement.
Sure, yeah.
But like, yeah, it is, and I don't try to hide that, where it is about, and I'll read it directly, where Aurora is in town because she's here to hunt down and murder the prick that snuck up behind her grandmother and shoved her so hard against the wall she cracked her head open and died, which is things that happen to Asian people, you know, during the pandemic, because there was so much anti-Asian sentiment kind of brought up during that time period.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, and then you distinctly talking about the feature of the eyes and stuff like that. Like that is like, so like, man, like, so I feel like you're diving into a whole other area of your psyche as a writer, as a creator, and it feels like a completely different place than, you know, like I said, like a couple of, you know, not say this book is not a downer in any way, or at least what I've read is not a downer. Like, I mean, I just feel like,
oh, it's a downer.
well, I mean, at least what I've read,
haven't read is believe me, it's a downer.
Well,
but I will
be contributing to your Kickstarter when it goes up, but as I always do, but like, I mean, the past couple of things have been comedies. And before I forget this question, because it popped into my head while we were chatting, the Skilk, right? Like this, that's how I pronounce it. Is it the yes. aliens? Yeah. The Skilk character in this looks a lot like one of your characters from Crashlands. Is that a coincidence or similar, or am I misremembering Crashlands? Like, isn't there, like, wasn't the main character a little bit like,
yeah,
lizard-like, sort yeah. of? Yeah.
She's cold-blooded. She's more of a fish than she is a lizard, where the Skilk are more lizard-like, which I think is just like, it's just kind of subconsciously like me.
Are you just a big V fan, like from the 80s? V, like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Or am I just too old?
Yeah, not specifically V, but like, but science fiction from that era and kind of previous is all just like lizard people.
Like
everything is very, and so I just associate, when I think of aliens, that's the first thing that comes into mind. And that, you know, as we talked about when I came on for Crashlands, she's more amphibious. She's more of a fish because it's a fish out of water story, and then Rimshot. For whatever reason, I think it was because I started with the eyes, where it's like, okay, how are her eyes different?
Mm.
And the idea of having the diamond pupils was like, okay, well, in that case, the alien race that she's a part of is reptilian. So
it's really cool to see you sort of like dive into this, especially with the conversations we've had over the years, you know, about, you know, both of our heritages and stuff like that, and just how, like, what I obviously you wrote this in 2020, and it's one of your pandemic sort of stories that, you know, we've chatted about before, but like, you know, you're doing comedy, like light stuff, fun stuff. And now this project is, you know, heavier for sure. Like, was there any kind of, were you worried at all? Like, were you concerned at all, like, to dive into this sort of thing? You know, because it is kind of like a 180, right? From like what's come before. So, and what you might have become quote unquote known for, like through your Kickstarter campaigns, like how was there any trepidation or anything, or
a little bit, specifically when it comes to Kickstarter, because, you know, I am trying to build an audience. I'm trying to, you know, have, people consistently come back and read my stuff. And, you know, it would certainly probably make more sense to, well, I don't know. One approach to it would be sticking with sci-fi comedy, and just doing that and making sure that I can cultivate that audience. And, you know, if you see a Gabe Chang comic, then you know it's a sci-fi comedy, and that honestly, that would be great because I love sci-fi comedy. So I am a little bit nervous about it. I think that, you know, that's probably another reason why I decided to partner with Colleen and to get involved with Warden Comics, because they have a following that knows them for action, for a little bit darker. Well, Colleen's books are darker fantasy, and just a more diverse crowd, I would say.
Yeah.
And so that should bring more people to this book and bring more people to my comics, and maybe there's some crossover with action with sci-fi comedy. So as far as promotion, there is a little bit of concern, but at the same time, like, my strategy is short stories, for the very reason that to get them out quickly and to do things quickly and to do, you know, two campaigns a year, and keep moving and keep doing different things. Yeah. So I think that, you know, if it, If it involves a little bit of ping ponging back and forth, and maybe, you know, it's a little bit like hard to build up an audience. At least I know the next one that I'm going to do is, it's not sci-fi. It's kind of a fantasy comedy, more similar to The Problem with Parallels or Crashlands, which are both sci-fi comedies now that I think about it. So those are bad examples, but it's more of a fantasy comedy. It's angels and demons, kind of humorous book. That's coming in February. So, you know, even if this is maybe, I don't think that this is going to be, I wouldn't say a stumbling block, but if it is, not so much building up the audience of people that want to read Gabe Chang comics because they are humorous. Mm-hmm. The next humorous one is coming pretty soon. There's not that long to wait.
Trying to tell everyone, calm down. I'm going to be funny again. It's going to be all right. But I mean, that brings me to the next way. You're working with a publisher and stuff like that. And how are they embracing your sort of like one and done aesthetic? Like, is this only, one issue, right?
Yeah, this is another one shot. It's a contained story, and they're happy with it. I mean, Ludi said that he thought it was great, and you know, he's just very motivated to get stuff with the Warden Comics label on it and get stuff on to convention tables, and same as Colleen, she's just excited to work on something that, you know, is going to be a little bit different from her own stuff and is going to kind of have her own stuff, meaning the stuff that she's written.
Got it.
So yeah, they've been very supportive. They're very excited about doing the comic, and especially because Ludi has worked with Colleen before. He knows how professional she is and the quality of her work. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of trust and there's a lot of excitement around that.
Nice. And so how much, I mean, we spoke a little bit of before about, or I said, you know, trust, like, yeah, I mean, you've been doing this on your own for like a long time, right? Like you've been to the point of like where I said before, I was like, are you just going to have like your own shingle? Like, what are we doing here? Like, are you, you know, going to be a publisher? And, but now it seems like you've gone to somebody. How much trust are you having to put into, you know, the people that you're teaming with on this, that it's all going to be handled in the way that you want it to be handled? I mean, why not just continue the way you've been going? Or have you just been not necessarily satisfied with the way your Kickstarters have gone? Or is it also a thing of like, I want somebody else to help me do the heavy lifting here?
I think it is not so much the heavy lifting, but it's very much more hands make less work, where you're running a Kickstarter is just exhausting.
Sure.
And this is me, like, I mean, first of all, this is me, like I said, from the start being like, I think that Colleen would be really good at this book.
Yeah.
So being excited to work with her again, for sure. But even if she had said like, oh, you know, I have this or that obligation and I don't think I can help you with the Kickstarter, I think that, you know, I still would have been very excited to get her involved, even just to do the pages. But that being said, she was willing to do the Kickstarter, and Ludi was willing to help with the Kickstarter. So, that was a major motivation, because they're exhausting and they're difficult, and they do feel like, you know, just because of the nature of internet promotion, you do feel like you're in an empty room shouting into the void.
Oh, trust me.
So I know all about it. Yeah, I know, you know,
400 and whatever episodes later, and or you put up a little drawing that you do and it's like 5 likes, like that's like, yeah, it's I know, trust me, I know. Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was just like, look, I know I'm not like George Perez or Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, but it's just like my art is better than 5 likes. Like, it's like, come on, people. Like, yeah. So no, I totally get what you're saying. But like, when you say help with the Kickstarter, for people that haven't run a Kickstarter, you know, of their own, like, what does that mean? Like, what do they do? Is it just getting the word out? Is it like helping you organize it? Is it setting it up? I mean, like, what are the things that they will help you do that you won't have to do yourself. And then before I forget again, is this going to be another one of your patented shorter runs, or is it, or will it be a longer Kickstarter because you're working with a publisher?
No, this is another shorter run.
Nice.
It's 2 weeks.
Sticking to it. Wow. Only two weeks. Gabe, you're amazing. I don't know how you do it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how people do the longer ones of just banging their heads against the wall for 2 weeks in between like the first starting week and the ending week. I can't do that again. Okay. So your original question, how are they helping? I had a couple of really good meetings with Colleen at the beginning where we were kind of taking our collective knowledge of Kickstarter and putting it together and talking about what has worked for us and what has not worked and prices and videos and rewards and add-ons and custom stuff. And we just had really good couple of phone conversations about what works and what doesn't work. And that was fun and collaborative and very validating. Every conversation I've had with her and then with some people at Kickstarter and other people that I know, that's just been very validating, where I was like, well, I'm seeing this in my individual stuff in situations where I have nobody to talk to about it. So what are you seeing? And are you seeing the same things? And it's yes, and this would work, and that's worse. Like, it's like, great. That's so wonderful that I'm not the only one. So that was really good. Having those conversations, planning out what it was going to be, when it was going to be, for how much it was going to be. And then setting it up. I mean, this is my 10th or 11th time setting up a Kickstarter. So actually getting the words onto the page and getting the graphics onto the page, is definitely probably the easiest part of like writing copy is always kind of hard for me. I hate writing copy. But once I get it done, like it's a couple of lines in there, like, and then throw up some graphics, make sure they look good, make sure that they're not too distracting. And obviously the pages are already done. So, you know, that's the hardest part of it is Colleen's job as far as doing the pages. And then Colleen did the video, which looks awesome. We figured out some cool custom rewards. So that came together really well. And then of course, like the name of the game is promotion. So that's where it's going to be a huge help, is having her send out info on her social media, and she's got a newsletter, and Ludi and her are both going to update their previous Kickstarter campaigns. I'm going to be doing my newsletter and my previous Kickstarter campaigns. That's where it's going to be the biggest deal, is that it's not just me. It's not just coming from my email, coming from my Instagram, coming from my previous campaigns. It's going to be a fun collaborative process to the point where I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be very successful and very fun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What, so do you think going forward, you know, for your next project that launches like in February, will you try and team with them or another publisher? Is that like, because of the collaboration on this particular launch, do you feel like that's something you might want to seek out more, or will, do you, you know,
because yes, it's like, and a, no,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. For the next one, no, because it's the second to last of my pandemic stories, and I feel very strongly about it being just, and this is kind of ego a little bit, where I'm just like, I want this one to be Gabe Chan Comics.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand that completely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably the short story after that, I will probably, same situation where it's like, I wrote it. This one is actually the first short story I wrote before the pandemic. So it's my oldest short story that I've been sitting on for the longest. And this is going to be kind of the end of all of those that I've written. So those are very important to me to be Gabe Chan Comics, for better, for worse. You know, I would like those to bear my logo on the front. But that is to say that I have other ideas that I'm going to be, you know, once we get through Requiem and Rilke, trying to pitch to Warden and, you know, and other short story ideas. I was like, what is the phrase? and maybe a graphic novel, but yeah, so yes and no to answer your question.
Sure. So your artist, you said she worked on Crow. Is that The Crow? Is that, or is that a different book? Like,
no, it's, her book is called Crow and the Eternal Night.
Okay.
And it's a dark fantasy story about, a zombie apocalypse and the world of birds all decide to do something about it.
Where is Crow, this?
I think her website is, I don't think it's Colleen Palmer. I think it's pixelgremlin.com, but I might be wrong.
I want to know about this bird book now.
It is not zombies. Pixel Gremlin. Oh my God. I'm such a bad collaborator. It is ColleenPalmer.com.
Colleen Palmer.
Yeah.
Send her my way. I love zombie stuff. I want to see that book. That's awesome. That sounds great. That sounds great. So it's interesting to me because it's like I totally understand like the ego thing and it wanting to be like your own and stuff like that. I'm just like, for me, it's like this particular project, like, I don't know how, like, do you love this less or something? Like what, like, that's what I'm trying to like, I'm trying not to make it sound bad, but it's like, what was it about this project? Is it because it is so different in tone that you were like, hey, let me hook up with someone else and stuff like that? Or like,
I would say that's definitely a big part of it. Yeah.
Okay. And then also the sort of maybe more personal aesthetic of it, like the issues that it's raising and things like that. Is that part of it as well?
Yeah. And I was thinking to, you know, when I eventually get through all of the short stories, creating them, I should say that I wrote during the pandemic, I'm going to collect them into a trade paperback. And that's going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of Elisa's art and then also Julia Pratt, my artist that did Crashlands. And those comics that I wrote kind of have a similar theme to them.
Okay.
They're about being stuck, right? Because I wrote them during the lockdown, so we were all stuck. It's all about feeling stuck in one way or another.
Yeah.
And so is this one too. It's about feeling stuck, but it's more specifically about like the Stop Asian Hate stuff and you know, all the stuff that we've been talking about. And when I think of all of those short stories as a collection, this one is kind of, Requiem and Relke is kind of an outlier. Where sure. I really did want it to be a different art style, even though I love Elisa, I love her so much.
the art is really good. And, it's different, yeah. But it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted the art style to be different. The theme is a little bit different the story is a little bit different, but the theme is actually kind of similar. And another reason why I didn't feel like I wanted to collect it with the other ones was because it's kind of a companion story to Into the Wilderness.
Okay.
Because Into the Wilderness is also kind of a Western, which is the spinoff of my Four Molly book about two side characters from Four Molly. Their names are Schneider and Caprica. It's a man and a dog, and they go on the hunt for in the New Jersey wilderness, which is a very lawless place, and they are kind of the law, they're the advocates. They go on the hunt for somebody that murdered a kid, that the kid came across a cache of explosives and then blew up, and so they go on the hunt for to find that person. So it is, that story is about going into the darkness and being pulled back by the light. Mm-hmm. Where this story is about going into the darkness, full stop.
Okay.
So, and it starts in a similar way of going on a quest for revenge or justice or vengeance or whatever, however the main character is justifying it, because somebody, an innocent person, was killed.
Yeah.
So they're very much sister stories, and they're written, like I said, around the same time. And I didn't realize, like, partway through writing this one, I'm like, oh, this is the same thing. Gabe, you need new ideas. for that reason, or those reasons, I should say, is why I was like, okay, I don't want this to be collected into the same collection, the same trade paperback as Into the Wilderness as the other one. So I was okay with going and experimenting outside of what I've done, outside of my comfort zone with this particular story, because I think it would, you know, like I said, I think that Colleen was going to bring a lot to it and going to add a lot to it. And I was like, okay, like this seems like the type of book that, based on what I've read from Warden and what was in their Monstrosities anthology with the story that I'd done with Elisa, like, okay, this seems like something would be up Ludi's wheelhouse. So, or up Ludi's alley, I should say. And yeah, so I took it to them, and you know, that, and the rest is recorded earlier in this podcast.
Yeah, no. It also seems to me like maybe getting more visibility on a story that is talking about something that is very important to you might be part of it as well, right? I mean, getting help on a Kickstarter, like using whatever resources that Warden Comics has and stuff like that, and getting it out is also something else that might subliminally, I know how to pronounce that word, might be happening with you, where this is like, you know, because it sounds, I mean, again, this is kind of like very different. And again, it's very related to like all the garbage that, you know, has been happening recently, whatever. I mean, not even recently, just over our lifetimes, right? Like, yeah, to people of color and stuff like that. And it just seems like this is the book where you are like very much like, I'm Gabe Chang, I'm here to talk about what I want to talk about. And it's not silly, it's not funny, it's serious, and people need to pay attention. And it seems like maybe something was going on with you where you were like, I want more people to see this. Am I close at all in my psychoanalysis of?
No, I think that's, you know, I think that the goal for every concurrent or every continuous campaign that I do is I want more people to see it. But I think that, you know, I haven't really thought about it too much, because obviously that is like I'm saying, it's, I always want more people to see it. But yeah, like, yeah, specifically with this one, I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to make a statement. I'm trying to talk about my experience in a way that I feel is unique to me, and also unique to how I like, what kind of writer I want to be and what kind of stories I want to tell.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, part of it is definitely like, this one is important to me. So how do I get it in front of as many people as possible? And yeah, so I would say that was a factor.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I only saw a couple of pages, but while I was reading them, I was like, oh, just knowing you, you know, I was like, oh, he's going in a different direction with this one. And it seems very personal. So that to me is like very interesting that you sought somebody else out to kind of help you with this and get it out there in maybe hopefully a broader way. Obviously, like you said, every creator wants their project to be embraced by everyone, you know, or seen by as many people as possible, if possible. But it just seems to me like, to me, like you seeking out a publisher, which I didn't even know, or I didn't remember from the emails that you sent me, to me, that's like, oh, this is kind of like a big deal for Gabe. Like, this is something completely different. So that to me is like, that says something in a way. So that's great.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it is all of those things for sure, because I'm excited about every Kickstarter I've done and every book that I've done. But this is a lot of new things for me. It's, yeah, you know, working with an artist that I worked with before, but, you know, not on a full comic, and working with a publisher and collaborating on a Kickstarter. And it's a lot of very fun, exciting things. And I'm very, very optimistic about that this campaign is going to be successful.
How much say did they have in like what you were doing with the story? Did they ask for changes in the script? Like how did, like when you presented it to them, and did they know at all? Like that this was, I mean, obviously just reading the text, you're like, oh yeah, obviously this is, but did they know like this was a very sort of different personal project to you? And did they have any exposure? I mean, they must have had exposure to your previous projects, right?
Yeah. I think I did have that conversation with Colleen when we started working on Pages. I don't remember specifically. I didn't have that conversation with Ludi necessarily. But I don't think so. I mean, as far as their notes, Ludi was only had a few and, you know, was mostly, you know, full steam ahead. Let's go. And Colleen gave me a couple notes that I made some changes to. But overall the story, remained the same. You know, it was just a couple of details and a couple of things that she pointed out that I thought were good changes. And a couple of notes I did push back and I was like, you know, this is very specifically done this way, like on, with the sunglasses thing that I talked to you about before, where, you know, when she's interacting with Zephyr on page 4 of the ones I sent you, Colleen was initially like, oh, okay, like let's have her, you know, she's going to have her sunglasses on in this. And then she takes it off in another part. It was page 5 or 6 at another dramatic moment. I was like, no, like she's very intentionally has her sunglasses off in this scene when she's talking to these characters.
Yeah.
But there are the other changes that I made based on Colleen's notes. So she's been a great collaborator as well, but the story for the most part has remained the same as if they hadn't given notes or if I had, you know, done it without a publisher. So
sure. Wow. Yeah. I guess like for me, it's kind of, I mean, obviously you've done For Molly and Into the Wilderness and stuff like that. So you're this sort of thing like, isn't like alien to me coming from you, but like, how much of a, yeah, I mean, how hard for you was it to dive internally into this? I mean, obviously these are sensitive subjects, right? Like how, like, obviously you had a yearning to chat about these issues, which again, you and I have chatted about several times through the past several years, but like actually putting it into a comic, into a book, like how did that feel for you? Like what was that process like working through whatever emotions that you were dealing with?
I would say that it felt really good, but it was a challenge, specifically to get into this character's head of somebody who feels the way that I do. And their response to it is violence, is extreme violence.
Yeah.
And the justification for that. And, in the final pages of the book, she lays out her justification for the things that she does. And then the counterpoint to that, you know, what is, which becomes, Zephyr's story, and Zephyr's part in the story. So figuring those things out, in the context of the things that I feel and my own experience was a challenge, but it was an extremely fun and rewarding challenge writing it, because it is a story where, you know, it's definitely easy to say that it's wrong to murder a bunch of people because it is, but is Aurora wrong? Like that is the question that I hope readers are asking when they get to the end, or is Zephyr right? Or is Zephyr wrong? And is Aurora right? You know, despite the murder and mayhem, because I wanted it to have that ambiguous ending, but to clearly show the resolute feelings that they both have about their experience and their opinions about the tensions and the violence that are occurring in the world between Skilk and the humans, and that by proxy are, you know, occurring between people of different race in our world. And I found that particularly challenging, like I said, and really an interesting experience writing that. And it was hard to figure out, okay, like what is this character's life? What is this character's experience? And yeah, I mean, I don't want to say much more because I don't want to give away what is in the final couple of pages of the book, but it was, I wouldn't say necessarily emotional, like in the way that For Molly was, because that was extremely personal and extremely emotional. Mm-hmm. But it was very like, not quite, I wish I had the word for it. It was very like, I feel like I left it all on the page. I feel like I feel like I didn't hold back. I feel like what I wanted to say with this character is said on the page, and I'm very proud of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great, man. I mean, yeah, I can't wait to see the whole thing put together because I very much like, it's interesting. The art style is different than some of the stuff that you've shared with me in the past, but I really dug it for what this was. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I really like the visuals. Obviously I liked the writing on the stuff that you sent me. It's interesting. You brought something up, in regards to violence and is violence justified and stuff like that. Like, do you get, I mean, I'm sure we all do. I mean, I've had this experience whenever you see like this racist garbage, like pop up in the media and stuff like that. Like, what are your feelings towards that? Like, I mean, striking back in violence. I mean, I guess you, like you said, you left it on the page, right? Like it might all be there in the book, right? Which I don't know, but so I don't maybe want you to spoil anything, but like, you know, like when somebody like Trump comes down and starts talking about Mexicans, you know, I'm not Mexican, but you're addressing the other, right? It's basically all Latin people that you're talking about. And I'm just like, most of them are rapists, most of them. And I'm like, dude, like that makes me angry, right? Obviously, I'm not going out and committing violence, nor do I have the desire to. But there is a part of me that's just like, you know, that anger comes up. Like, you think this book or creating this book helped you kind of deal with that stuff? That comes
up. Yeah, and I think it came from a place of what is the answer? Because we've seen the nonviolent protests, we've seen the peaceful attempts, and we're still in, and there's still violence against people of color.
Yeah.
We've seen the violence and we've seen the riots and people striking back, like you were saying, and it still happens anyway. So like both things have been attempted, both things have been reactions, and we're still here. We're still in the situation where there are people that are exploited and objectified all the terrible things, oppressed and systematically kept down, and so the book really comes from a place of like, and that's what I was saying, like at the end, it's like, is Aurora wrong? Like,
yeah,
because it doesn't feel like the opposite is working, and it's the same for Zephyr. It's like, is Zephyr right? Because it doesn't feel like what she's doing is working, but at the same time, how could it possibly be that what Aurora does is the right thing to do? You know, how could the cycle of violence continue and that be the way that things happen? Or how could, you know, you continuously turn the other cheek and expect people to change? That's the kind of the heart of the conflict at the end. Like I said, without giving too much away, and that, you know, that is how I feel about things happening in the world. Like, obviously I don't, you know, like you were saying, I don't have a desire to commit violence. I don't condone the violence necessarily. But what's it going to take? What's it going to take to make things better? And right now the answer is, from at least from my perspective, is I don't know. And it's ambiguous. And that's why I wanted the ending of this book to be ambiguous.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because, I mean, and not to make too much of a deep dive into it, but like the Martin Luther King, you know, and Malcolm X debate is just like, I read the autobiography of Malcolm X while I was in college, and it just changed my life. Like, it just changed the way I saw everything. It just changed everything, right? And especially just dealing with it, like, in ridiculous comic book terms, like, you know, something that comes up on this podcast every once in a while is the X-Men. Like, people love the X-Men, and Magneto is like my second favorite, like, villain and stuff like that. Like, in the comics, Dr. Doom is number one, and, you know, Magneto is number two. And it's just like recently I saw that somebody had put like one of these t-shirts for sale. I think it might've been from the Grant Morrison run where it said like Magneto was right. Like one of the kids was like wearing a Magneto. And I was like, oh, I want to get that. But then again, I'm like, was he like, is he like, you know, but yeah. How long can you be a prep? Like how long can you just take this garbage, you know, that people keep like shelling out and just be like, okay, like you said, turn the other cheek, which, you know, or Gandhi, like an eye for an eye makes everyone blind, right? Like all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just like all this deep stuff that you and I were probably never know the real answer to. But like, as I get older and stuff like this, there's a part of me that's like, you know, because eventually Malcolm X turned away from all that, right? Like he was like, we should all come together as a people. Like that was one of the inspirational things about his life that I was like, okay, he stopped maybe like hating white people altogether and started seeing the world in a more complex, once he left the United States, you know, and saw the rest of the world and was rejected by, you know, his religious, you know, treated as a traitor, you know? And so it's just interesting to me though, because it's just like my instinct as I get older is like, is it all just going to devolve into violence? You know what I mean? Is it all just going to be another, you know, there's all these people talking about civil war and like possibly happening. And I'm like, over what? Like over what? Like I'm literally like over what, it, you know,
yeah.
It's so crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Gets me riled up as you can see, So this is another one and done, right?
Yes, another one shot.
Okay.
You just keep
creating these worlds and like you're disposing them of them like tissue, Gabe. I don't understand how you do it.
I know. I'm so impetuous where I'm like, oh, I want to write a story like this. I want to write a story like this. And like, if I was, I don't know, if I was Scott Snyder or Tom King or somebody who had, you know, or Jeff Lemire, I could just write continuous books about with different genres and have multiple publishers publishing them. But I'm just me. And, you know, well now I'm me and Colleen and Ludi and,
yeah.
And so I think that this makes sense to me. And this is, kind of the production that I can do and the amount of time that I can spend on it. And I'm very happy with it. And as I've said, I think on other times I've been on this podcast, always leave them wanting more. always know when to go out.
I guess so. And Warden's okay with it. Welcome. Warden's okay with it. Just one and done.
I guess. Oh, so. Yes, they are.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, Gabe, thank you for coming on. What is the name of the book again? So that, because I'll screw it up, the pronunciation.
It is, Requiem and Relke, a one-shot science fiction Western. So if you search that on Kickstarter, it will come up. And it's it's a half alien, half human assassin returns to her rural hometown to hunt down the people that murdered her grandmother. And I'm very excited about it. It launches on Wednesday, August 9th. And then let me make sure I got the date right here. 2 weeks later on Wednesday, August 23rd, it is a wrap. So please check it out.
Yeah, go support it. I love Gabe's stuff. That's why I love having you back on every time. You always supply great conversation, and I'm thankful to you for keep coming on to my little podcast that's almost 500 episodes. How long have I been doing this? But anyway, yeah, no, I always appreciate your time. Where can people find you online? Like your stuff? Like your, what if they want you know, access to your other books?
Yes, GabeChangComics.com, Chang, Cheng. And then on Instagram at GabeChangComics. I'm on X, but I might not be there for much longer.
I was an early abandoner
I remember like when I was on for Formali or Crashlands, you're like, get off of there. And I'm like, I know.
No, I was on there for a while. I just, you know, I don't have that. And I make no bones about it, that secret. I don't know what the social media secret is. And it's funny because I see other people who I think are like very deserving of like lots of likes. And I'm like, why aren't they getting like 1,000, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, I hate it all. I hate it all.
Yeah.
I hate it all. But no, your stuff is great. Gabe Chang, go to Kickstarter. What's the name of the book again, Gabe?
Requiem and Relke.
Requiem and Relke. I mean, I liked what I saw. I'm sure it's going to be great. And it's definitely delving into more serious issues than we've, you know, maybe dealt with you in the recent past. But I'm open to it. I'm ready. Let's get political. Let's burn it all down, people. No, don't burn it all down. I mean, we all still want to go to the grocery store and, you know, have our TV shows every once in a while. But geez, Louise, it's getting crazy out there. Anyway, my name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on our website, parttimefanboy.com. I always say us. It's kind of like me, like these days. I mean, I have people come on. But anyway, parttimefanboy.com. Email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. I am still on Facebook, still on Instagram, not on Professor Xavier's whatever Twitter thing. I don't know what's going on there. No, I'm not trashing Marvel. I love Marvel. Not there. But yeah, thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time.